Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
We've been making this show for going on 2 years now. And for the record, I appreciate every single person who's ever listened to this show or told someone to listen to it. I owe all of you a root beer. If you find me, I will buy you a root beer if you listen to this podcast. Thank you. Anyways, almost 2 years. This is the 98th episode. I've learned a lot about what makes a sports moment good enough for the First Ballot Hall of Fame. Remember, it's not necessarily about the best moments, although there are great feats of athleticism in our Hall of Fame. It's about the moments that matter. So what matters to the First Ballot Hall of Fame? Stakes matter. The higher the level of competition, the better. Stats matter. The better the game, the better performance, the higher the chances of induction. Good and bad luck can hurt and or help. Are there any little weird details? Those help. Why not? Is Chris Dudley's wife also named Chris Dudley, spelled the same way? C-H-R-I-S? Yes? Okay, well, that detail helps this moment matter more. To that end, one of the things that matters most to the First Ballot Hall, the podcast and the organization, is comedy and attitude. And comedy that comes from attitude. I might say disproportionately, attitude and comedy can swing a moment in or out of the hall. Today, we're starting our search for the funniest sports moment of all time right here on First Ballot. Welcome to First Ballot, the podcast that celebrates the moments in sports that really matter and inducts them in to the First Ballot Hall of Fame. If they're good enough, you know, I've inducted Carmelo Anthony glazed donut face ass tweeted in my First Ballot Hall of Fame. And I notoriously did not induct moments like Bryce Drew's buzzer beater in the NCAA tournament. I really have a major bone to pick with a lot of really most college sports moments, but whatever. People say, you put the Melo tweet in and not this great basketball moment. Aren't you worried about what that says about your Hall of Fame? No, I am not. I know exactly what it says about my Hall of Fame, and I am proud of what it says. The First Ballot Hall of Fame podcast is brought to you by the Ball is Life Podcast Network. Listen to all the shows on the Ball is Life Podcast Network, In the Paint, Cook It and Book It, Hoopsology, and many more. Check out the Ball is Life Podcast Network because they support your boy, me. Who am I? I'm your host, Neil, the podcast Jordan Clarkson, half Filipino, half Cheesecake Factory, crispy chicken costeletta. I am the Reebok pump god, the Motor City Cobra. I'm not the biggest Lakers fan. I am the best Lakers fan, coming to you live from the Shaquille O'Neal Office Depot, big and tall, executive suite, desk chair. I'm thinking about eliminating this plug of the Shaq O'Neal Office Depot chair line because I've been doing it for 2 years. They haven't paid me one red cent.
But I think it paints such a picture of who you are to the listener. Like, this, I'm listening to a big man. But I want to know that right out of the gate.
But I won't do these things for free, and these companies need to know that. As previously stated, today's episode of the First Ballot Hall of Fame podcast is not sponsored by anyone, but we could be sponsored by the moment in the 1999 Jim Henson Company film Muppets from Space, where Jeffrey Tambor asks his assistant, who is a giant Muppet bear, for the remote control. He asks for the remote, and the giant Muppet bear assistant gets confused and thinks Jeffrey Tambor might be asking for a goat, the animal, a goat. Our guest today will get back to you for your take on this in a moment, but have I set up this clip appropriately? Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, it's perfect. Okay. It's perfect. It's my favorite thing.
He's asking for, again, as a reminder, he's asking for the remote. he's ringing his giant bear assistant for the remote, and the giant bear gets confused. Here we go. Let's listen to it together.
Ventro.
Yes, sir?
The remote.
The goat?
The remote.
The remote? Oh, I thought he said the goat.
Oh, fantastic. Now, I need to ask our guest why this is so funny. We haven't introduced him yet, so let's do that now. Our guest today is my favorite comedy writer. He's also the best producer I've ever worked with. He was a writer on Friends of the People, producer on Doing the Most with Phoebe Robinson, the director of Fearless in Japan with Francisco Lindor, and co-executive producer of No Script with Marshawn Lynch. It's the very smart, the very 12-year-old brained George Anagnostakos. Georgie!
Thank you so much for having me. I really love the intro. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate you being here. Tell us why that moment from Muppets from Space is so funny. Can you get into that?
It is the disdain and the disgust from Jeffrey Tambor that he has to work with this assistant. This is the assistant that's been assigned to him. This high-ranking government official, and he couldn't be strapped with a stupider, dumber animal. And that the idea that he's also 10 feet away from him asking him for a remote control. Right. The bear thinks it's asking him for a goat. It's just, phonically, it's perfect.
It is so good phonically.
And like a little behind the scenes, my understanding of that scene is the Muppet actors were continually trying to get Jeffrey Tambor to break, a notoriously hard person to get to break. And that was an improvised line from the actor trying to get Jeffrey Tambor to break. So that's his earnest reaction of like, no, you moron. Of course, I'm not asking for the goat. I love it. I love it so
much.
Wait,
where did you read that somewhere that he riffs that?
I did.
Oh my God.
I read that somewhere that they were really trying to get Jeffrey Tambor to break.
Oh my God. That makes it so funny. Yes, I do too. I really do. And I don't even want them to know the truth. I'm not going to look it up because I just want to believe that that's the truth. He really digs in on the G on goat. He really hits that G super hard. And there's that ripe, juicy pregnant pause right before there.
Yes.
We're like, yes, it's really good.
That's exactly the timing is perfect. Like the Muppet actor really, really lets it sit in the perfect amount of time before coming back with the goat. It's so
listen
it's
to that
so
Muppet
wonderful.
Voice. What a good Muppet voice. One of the I best wish. Muppet voices you have there, George.
Oh, thank you. My true speaking voice is not that far from a Muppet. So I think I still say thank you to that.
The other thing that I like about this moment is that that he is doing that stereotypically traditionally like 1980s, 90s rich boss thing where you hit the buzzer on your desk to call the guy.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I just love that.
You're right. That is so 90s. You know what it reminds me of? Like the Drew Carey show where like the boss is right in the next room and would push the button.
Yeah.
To talk to Mimi or Phoebe or whatever. I forget what the woman's name was that sat at that desk right there.
Yes. There is something very dismissive about, I won't even go out and ask for you or call for you. I just want to hit the, I couldn't even be bothered to walk out and talk to you face to face. I need to just hit this button and have you, you know, brought in.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the pinnacle of technology. I can sit here, push a button, and someone can hear me in another room.
Is that the funniest moment from that movie? Is the rest of the movie good? I've never seen Muppets from Space, admittedly.
There's funny moments in that movie, but that stands high above for me.
Really?
Any moment with the bear gets me good.
This is why we have George here on the show today. There's no one better at getting to the bottom of why a moment is funny. And that's what we're going to do today. We're starting the search for the funniest sports moment ever. Like, this could be an endless search, and it starts today. George has picked a moment he feels could be considered the funniest sports moment ever. I have too. We'll compare and contrast. Before we start, though, to lend to your comedy resume, you were an intern at Late Show with David Letterman. Is that correct?
That's true.
Dave stories? Any great stories from the show, your time there at the show?
Everybody, I think to work on a late night talk show, everybody is a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
Like everyone is just a, everyone is, and I mean that in a good way.
Yes.
Everybody is just a little bit crazy and a little bit funny. One example, and I don't know if I've ever told you this story. There was an occasion where I got to be on the show parallel parking a car. Dave did that with interns all the time.
Yes.
We'll have you come out to the street, see if you can parallel park a car. I was luckily chosen to be one of those interns. And I found out, you know, 10 minutes before it was going to happen that I was going to be the person, certainly by design, which I'm thankful for because I'm an anxious person in general. And knowing that I was going to have to do that, I probably would have spent the entire day like sitting in a cubicle in that office, like watching parallel parking videos.
Right. Pantomiming it.
Exactly. So I did it that day and it went great. I think I did a really good job parallel parking. I feel confident and proud about what I did.
Amazing.
So the next day, back to normal intern duties, and oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm blanking his name. Dave's stage manager, Biff.
Yes.
During rehearsals, Biff is watching the door and always paparazzi start camping out near the door to take pictures of the celebrities
that are
going into the theater. So as an example of like why I think everyone at this show is kind of funny, the way that theater was set up was so weird that sometimes the fastest way to get to where the office part of the building was to where the theater part of the building was you would literally leave the building, walk like half a block and go back into another door. Mm. So at some point, I'm running scripts from rehearsal up to the writers back down to rehearsal with like changes or whatever. And Biff sees me coming and I'm going out the door where all the paparazzi are standing.
Mm-hmm.
So, Biff stops me. He puts his hand out and he goes, hold on, like, give me 1 second. And so he peeks his head out the door and he goes, here he comes. So all the paparazzi are prepared for that night's celebrity to take
their
first step out of the, so then he swings the door open and out I come, all these paparazzi go,
oh, oh my God, so funny.
And it was like, I don't know if you've ever had a group full of people so visibly disappointed
with
you.
So funny.
It was like you could feel the air being let out of the balloon. All these people wasted all these shots. You could immediately see them turn down, scroll through the things they took, and they were, deleting my picture.
Do you remember who the guest was that night? Tell me it was Charles Grodin.
No, I don't remember who the
William
who
Hurt
the guest was.
Was it William Hurt?
Yeah. It might have. Okay. Honestly, it might have been
all
William
right, let's
Hurt.
Let's just go with it. Do you hold on? Let's jump back into your story. When a producer or somebody comes up and asks if you'll parallel park, do they ask the room or do they ask you?
It was just me. I was sitting in a desk outside the head writer's room, and they came over to me and they were like, "Can you come downstairs? Can you do something for us?" And I was like, "Sure." They didn't even really tell me.
Wow, amazing. Hold on. Do you think they wanted you? Do you think they had like written you into this? Do you think they were like, "We'll ask that George guy"?
I think so.
Okay. Amazing.
I think so.
That's
'cause it was a collection of, there were three or four of us I think I was asked on purpose because the Stangles, the head writers.
Yes. That's gotta make
it
you
made
feel
me,
good.
It made me feel good. But also my specific kind of like worry and anxiety was also terrible. Like
right.
No, I don't need to do this.
Right. So you parallel park the car. Do you talk to Dave before? Do you exchange words with Dave?
No, you
just do it.
You go right to the street. They put a little thing in your ear and then they go, okay, the next time someone talks, you're going to be able to hear Dave.
Oh my God. And what does he say to you? Do you remember generally what he says?
He asked, you know, what's your name? What do you do for us? Who taught you how to drive? you know, and then you just, it's funny. 'Cause like in hindsight, what he kept telling me in my ear was to gun it. Like he wanted me to really floor it. But I was so nervous that I was like, how could I break this rental car? But that clearly would have been the funnier thing to do if I just, you know, gunned it. But I was earnestly trying to parallel park.
Do you think, so what did he say? My brain is scrambling here with all these follow-ups. Are you put it in there basically perfectly? Do you feel pretty good? Score your parallel parking job in that moment. out of 10?
I definitely hit the cars in front and behind
me.
Oh,
you did?
Yes. Not hard, but I kissed
them.
New York tapped them. New York parking, 10 of 10. Anywhere else, I probably would have gotten in trouble.
Right. Okay. What does Dave say? Is he impressed?
He is. He played it up really well. He was impressed. You know, he got the audience on my side. And I think out of all of the interns that were there, I think I did the best job.
Got it.
So he was like, oh, we did it. We won. It was like the game show moment I've won the prize. We did it. Mm. We the hypothesis has been proved correct.
What a dream. Do you have footage of this?
Yes. I can find it.
Is it digitized? Is it online?
I think it's on YouTube.
Oh my God. Can we post it in our show thread?
Yeah, of course.
Oh my God. This is really exciting. Really exciting. Fantastic. Amazing. If you don't follow us, please do @FirstBallotHOF on Instagram, @FirstBallotPod on Twitter. I realize those should be the same. We have to jump into our moments here. We have to dive into our funniest sports moments. Actually, hold on. Before we do that, I forgot to ask you this. Do your kids watch the Muppets?
We have not.
Oh, I'm so sorry, George. We don't give a shit about your kids. Me and my audience, we don't give a goddamn about your kids. We don't care about them. Do you hear me? And that's because it's time for something more important. We usually save this segment for the end of the show, but I love to cut people off when they're talking about their kids. I thought we could tee that kid question up right here after the Muppet talk. I thought that made sense. So we're doing this segment early. Perfect execution, 10 out of 10, no notes. George, are you ready for more important?
Oh, I'm ready. I'm absolutely ready. I'm not going to be fooled like I was last time.
I'm about to ask you a series of questions. Your answer to these questions are all far more important than anything you've said up until this point. They'll probably be more important than anything you say the rest of this podcast. They will define who you are as a person on this planet. Here we go. More important question number one. Who is your favorite Muppet?
I have to go Fozzie Bear. Makes me laugh the most, and I think he's the funniest and also the person I'd want to spend the most time with.
You you have that answer right away. Have you considered this before?
I have. I absolutely have.
What is the best airport you've been in? Not your favorite. The airport you were most impressed by. George, big airport lover. He loves airports.
I love airports. Oh, wow. You know, the new Delta terminal at LaGuardia is really nice. It is. That terminal makes me feel like we have advanced as a civilization. If you ever went to LaGuardia before and after, yes, you'd be like, I'm on another planet. Yes. This must be a different world.
Yep. Completely serious, folks. I want you all to know that. He loves airports.
I really do.
To that end, he also loves roller coasters. George, what is your favorite roller coaster?
I love the Incredible Hulk coaster at Islands of Adventure at Universal Orlando. That might be my favorite roller coaster that has inversions. And I also love Superman roller coaster at Six Flags New England. I think for just pure physics and airtime is exceptional. Those two stand out far, far, far above the other ones in my life. Although I love all roller coasters. I've been X2 at Six Flags Magic Mountain is like the most confusing ride I've ever been on in my life.
Okay, we're getting a little out of control here. Let's dial this back in.
Yeah, understood.
A couple things. One, I want the audience to know there's been no editing in this section. He is running right into these answers immediately. Well thought out. Ready to go in the holster. However, you have said three coasters now. You've said some Hulk thing, you've said some Superman thing, and something called the X2 or whatever the hell you said. You have to pick one. I said, what is your favorite? That means one. You have to pick one of those three.
The Incredible Hulk coaster at Universal Orlando Islands of Adventure is my favorite.
Do you have a favorite video genre on America's Funniest Home Videos or a favorite show segment from AFV? Either one.
Nut shots. Anytime someone gets surprisingly hit in the balls, that's going to be the funniest thing they got.
Yeah, I got it. I get that. My wife, I only asked this question because I wanted to say what my wife's favorite genre is. And it's she loves old people who are like dancing or and then end up falling or like at the side of a dock and like stumble over and they're trying to get themselves, you know, like trying to get their feet under them. But they just keep stumbling and like inertia takes them. you know, face first into the water.
That's really good.
That's, she absolutely loses her fucking mind when that happens.
I love that. I love that. And a close second to me would be anytime there is someone trying some sort of borderline extreme sport that gets, that kind of gets away from them.
Yeah,
like I like watching someone on a bike,
yes,
like go over to like a dock and just kind of, you know, like fly off. There's probably 1,000 videos of uncles trying those, like, you know, little electric scooters.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
they end up, you know, falling back and cracking their head open.
There's something about when someone thinks they look cool, like they think they're doing something that's going to look awesome or be awesome, and then they look stupid. That dichotomy
it's
is
the
so
best.
Funny.
Yes,
very good. This is a lot of fun. All right, Georgia, you have $10. You are very. I'm setting a scene for you here. You have $10. You are very hungry. You had a late, let's say you had a late breakfast, but you didn't really have a lunch. Maybe you had an apple. You were hungry. Let's say it's Friday night. Let's say your wife has taken the kids to your in-laws. I do love Georgia's kids. They're the best. But it was fun to cut them off. Your wife is taking the kids to the in-laws. $10. You can get whatever you want for dinner. What are you getting?
I would my honest immediate answer would I would get two spicy chicken sandwiches from Popeyes.
Wow. Yeah.
Because I think I know for a fact that I think that would come in a little under $10, or at least it used to. And I want the chicken. I just want the sandwich. I don't want the soda. I don't want the fries. Give me two of those chicken sandwiches.
Really,
that's exactly
that.
What I'd go for.
What a great order. What a fantastic order. I think that Popeye's chicken sandwich is the best chicken sandwich I've had from a chain restaurant.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No question.
Really good.
No question.
Really
and I'm glad you brought that up, because there is a good fast food tie-in to my segment.
Yes.
And I would love to to talk to you more about that.
George, last question and more important. Name something that really kicks ass.
I can't say roller coasters or America's Funniest Home Videos.
Nope. We've discussed that.
Physics.
Okay, well, fantastic job on more important there from George. Really, really well done. All right, George,
thank
now
you.
We do have to dive into our moments. I'm going to present you a moment. You're going to present me a moment. We'll discuss them. We'll decide which moment is funnier. Would you like to go first or second? Do you have a thought about that?
I will go first.
Okay, amazing. I was going to go first, but this is exciting. George is going to go first. He's going to present his moment to me. George, the floor is yours.
The moment I picked has to do with Isaiah Thomas being ejected from a game against the Philadelphia 76ers. And the reason he got ejected, to people who were watching at home, was a pure mystery. Watching the game, it went from Isaiah Thomas missing a foul shot, making a foul shot, and then being ejected. And it was a complete, it was like, what happened? How, like, what has transpired to have this man leave the game? And I think what transpired was one of the funniest moments that's ever happened in the NBA.
Why don't we start with the ear test? We'll play the clip from the game broadcast as they're trying to suss out and figure out what the hell is going on. Here's the audio from just the game broadcast. We'll start with that.
They're looking at Isaiah Thomas potentially having gone into the stands, is what we're being told. IT is on the bench right now.
It must have been a fan.
I didn't see it. Let's check in with Chris and see what he knows.
Well, guys, as soon as the play was over with, Isaiah Thomas walked right up into the stands and saw the two fans. Whatever they said to him, IT went up to the guys face to face. Wizard security came over there, escorted the two Philly fans out of here. But Isaiah was calm. He just walked right up to him, said whatever he had to say to him. There you see Wizard security right there. And they got those two guys out of there. The guy with the cap to the back and his friend with the blue Sixers jersey on, they were escorted out of the arena. So whatever they said to IT, it was enough for him to walk into the stands.
So I think if you're watching, if you watch this live, it's a mystery as to what has happened.
That's right.
It doesn't make any sense.
That's right.
Isaiah Thomas walked as calm and as confidently as you can imagine a human being walking and being directly into the stands to talk to someone. There's no speed in his gait. There's no malice in his walk. He literally just cool as a cucumber walks into the stands to talk to some.
He really saunters into the crowd. Never before has someone broken that fourth wall between the fans and the game so calmly.
So casually. This was just like this, like he was going over to greet a relative or something.
Yes. And you're right. There's a Zapruder film aspect to this in that clearly the broadcasters, if you're watching the game, they have no idea what's going on. They're trying to piece it together. They're actually using the sideline reporter to like suss out what the hell is going on in this situation. That's super helpful here because at the time, as you're watching this live, no one had any clue what was going on.
No idea. He is so calm and confident. Ugh. And there, again, unless somebody pointed out that he went into the stands, you have no idea he even did it.
That's right. There's clearly a hubbub because security is milling about and he's walking back out of the stands. But he's so calm and collected as he goes and confronts these people that it totally could have just passed and people wouldn't have noticed.
That's right. So what follows is then Isaiah Thomas being ejected from the game for going into the stands.
Amazing.
And you're like, why? What happened? Two other fans are also ejected. Right. They're asked to leave the. So you're like, okay, well, something happened between these two, you know, fans yelling at players, players getting back at the fans. That's not terribly uncommon in the NBA. It doesn't happen all the time.
Right.
But you're like, oh, okay, weird. Something happened here.
Right.
But it's so late in the game that you're like, I want answers. I hope I get answers. And it's not until the press conference or the kind of Q&A that happens in the players' locker room after the fact that we get clarity on what the situation was that led to Isaiah Thomas going into the stands.
Let's listen to that together. Here's the press conference from Isaiah Thomas.
What prompted you to go into the stands?
I'm never going to be disrespected in any way. My dad taught me at a young age, don't ever let anybody call you out of your name.
So I'm sorry to jump into this, but like he's set the table here. You're like, what the hell happened? Like he's talking about his dad and like old lessons. It's really rich and ripe and juicy here out of the gate.
And it doesn't matter where I am. That's not going to happen. So when I missed the first free throw and made the second, I'm running back and a fan has both of his middle fingers up and said three times.
Okay, ESPN censored that. I went and found the clip uncensored so that I could be certain of what the fans said to Isaiah there. I think it matters here in this moment. I found it uncensored. Here's that audio.
Man has both of his middle fingers up and said, fuck you, bitch, three times.
Fuck you, bitch. There you have it. So he says, fuck you, bitch, three times. Isaiah Thomas, this is two young men. This is two. I think it's important there. I don't call people the B word, but I think it's important that we hear that audio.
Has both of his middle fingers up and said, fuck you, bitch, three times.
Fuck you, bitch. So this is a person at the 76ers game that says, fuck you, bitch, three times to Isaiah Thomas. Let's
three
pick
times.
Up the.
Let's three times up, with his middle fingers
with
up.
With his middle
I
fingers
think that's
up.
Very important as a visual.
Yes. Can you imagine a guy in the stands double middle fingering and saying, fuck you, bitch, three times? Ugh.
And yelling it and it being directed at you. That's all very important.
He must have, that guy, tell me if I'm wrong, that fan's having a blast, right?
Oh my God. How could you know? I mean, this is, he's having a blast and this guy, he thinks he's, you know, he thinks he can do this, you know, with Imperium,
with
right? Like no one can touch me.
Totally.
Right here, pal.
Untouchable. He thinks there's no way this goes south. This is just an awesome thing to say in this moment, and I'm having a blast. Oh my God.
My buddy's gonna laugh.
Oh,
my buddy's gonna think
question.
He's gonna think I'm so cool.
There's no doubt he said that and did that thinking. Man, my buddy thinks this is so funny. Yeah. Oh
everybody
God.
Around me is going to carry me on their shoulders out of here.
He's a showman. That guy is putting on a show in that moment. Okay, here we go. Let's get back to Isaiah's press conference.
Has both of his middle fingers up and said three times. So then the timeout goes and I go in the stands to confront him. I say, don't be disrespectful. That calm. Be a man. I'm a man before anything, and be a fan. And his response was, I'm sorry, I just wanted a Frosty.
So that's why we find out in this moment that he was being that disrespectful to a professional basketball player because he wanted a free ice cream.
Oh my God. George, tell everybody a little bit about the Frosty Freezeout promotion that the 76ers run here.
The Frosty Freezeout is a promotion where in the third and fourth quarters, yes, if a player misses two consecutive free throws, Wendy's gives out free Frosties for everyone in the greater Philadelphia area. Campaign that read for years. So important context is Isaiah Thomas made his first throw and then missed his second free throw.
No, pardon. He misses the first.
Oh, pardon. Yeah, that's right. He missed the first, made the second, denying the crowd free Frosties.
Crushing the audience. Everyone is presuming everyone can already taste the free Frosty after he misses the first.
They can taste it. And the fans' reaction was to say, fuck you, bitch. Fuck you, bitch. Fuck you, bitch. With two middle fingers up. Now, the reason I love this moment and is not because of what this, not because of the idiot fan, but Isaiah Thomas in this interview is so, to me, he sounds hurt.
Yes. Yes. 100%. I mean, he's hurt.
He sounds like he has been like a man scorned and, like his walk over to talk to this person was not one of like, I'm going to go beat you up. It was like a parent going over to a child to be like, we don't do that.
Yes.
This is not how we conduct ourselves here.
Oh my God.
Ugh. I think you also have to take a step back and think about what the Wendy's Frosty Freeze promotion, like how that came to be, I think is really funny. And Neil, I know you've worked for, and you've worked for these like corporate monoliths.
Yes.
Imagine the amount of approvals and okays and like meetings that took place so that something like the Frosty Freezeout could exist.
Yes.
And it's all predicated on what I assume is in basketball, like one of the top three most embarrassing things that could happen to you.
Right.
You know, like there's a bunch of, there are all these corporate, like Harvard MBA guys going like, well, how much money would we lose on the Frosty? But they're probably not just going to get a Frosty. They're also going to get a French fry. Maybe they'll get a double stack, you know, like, let's say it's $14,000 worth of Frosties, but they buy, you know, I don't know, $12,000 worth of fries. Somebody gets a drink and like, they're all doing this and it's all built on like the shame and hopeful disappointment of a professional basketball player missing two free throws.
So funny.
It's crazy. Cause I think it has to be like, other than you miss a wide open dunk, like a breakaway dunk. What's more embarrassing than missing two free throws? And imagine how you as a player, imagine how that would make you feel.
Ugh.
And then there's this company going, I'm going to monetize that.
Yes.
I'm going to make money off of how bad you feel right now. And the entire audience is going to cheer at your failure.
It's so funny. And I had never considered this until you're just going through it, but you're exactly right. It's not just, I want to seize this moment and take advantage of it. If the guy misses the first one, it really ratchets up the excitement. So the second a player misses the first end of the free throw in the second half, the entire arena must go nuts. It could happen any game. It could happen multiple. There are multiple chances where this could happen. It's a great promotion. I'm a little disappointed. I actually looked it up. I'm a little disappointed that Wendy's no longer doing it. I think it's now a Chick-fil-A thing, which
significantly worse, yeah, significantly way worse. Worse.
It's so much funnier that it's a Frosty. And also
it's so much funny.
I do find it weird that, Chick-fil-A sells homophobic chicken. I do think that's
yeah, exactly.
Not my favorite either.
Not my favorite. Chick-fil-A, I talked about Popeyes in the beginning of this. Forget Chick-fil-A sucks. Popeyes is way better. Wendy's is way better.
Let's go.
I think you were talking also about the excitement. Like I found a clip, I'm sending it to you now, Neil, of famed basketball announcer Kevin Harlan talking about the Frosty Freeze.
Oh my God.
For the crowd at large. This is from a different game, but just how prevalent this was as an obstacle for opposing players to get over, I think is important to understand.
Let me download this because I've not seen this clip. I want to listen to it with you.
Uh-oh, here comes the Philly faithful again now. That Frosty, it's on the line here if he misses it. Uh-oh.
They can taste it.
Yes, they can.
They can feel it. They can see it. Oh, they got it! It's a Frosty for everybody! Slurp it and enjoy it.
Fantastic.
Can you imagine? I mean, yeah, that's what you're going up against as a player.
Fuck. And now, hold on. To be clear, though, that is not that is not Isaiah Thomas's, because Isaiah Thomas makes his free throw and dashes the hopes of the 76ers
exactly.
faithful. This is just a different.
This is a different game where the Frosty Freeze that is achieved. This is just to paint the picture of why this fan was so mad.
Yes.
He's so mad.
And because that moment was taken from him. That the excitement, the communal
snatched.
Excitement, the Kevin Harlan ramping things up, that moment was taken from that fan and was the reason behind his anger and his fuck you bitch three times in the middle fingers.
Exactly. And also, Neil, how you've been to a lot of basketball games. This guy, I mean, he doesn't have bad seats, right? He's sitting pretty close to the court. Great seats. How much would you guess those seats cost?
Great question. I don't know in Philly, but in New York, and I can't imagine it's that big of a difference. In New York, those seats are $600.
Gotta be.
A pop?
Right? A pop.
You know what? Honestly, they might be $1,000. They might be $1,000. I mean, they're probably $600 like face value. But you know, unless you bought those as season tickets, my guess is you could be paying upwards of $1,000. So to me, it's somewhere between $1,200 and $2,000 for the pair of tickets in that section.
So now, in 2019, there was a period in time where you could get a Frosty for 50 cents. Yeah. 2019 is when this clip is from. So at some point in that year, you could get a Frosty for 50 cents. And this man is that irrationally angry about being denied that dairy treat after dropping, you said, close to $1,000 to watch the Sixers and the Wizards play a game. It's breathtaking.
I haven't seen this, and I couldn't find any information on this fan, but I wonder if getting thrown out of this game, I wonder if he's ever allowed to come back to a game. Like, is there a scenario, is there a path where that fan is never allowed back into whatever they call the 76ers arena? I think there is.
I think, yeah. I think he has to. He also, you could see in the clips, he gets very defensive. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa. I didn't think this would be part of it.
Yes, yes.
I didn't think I'd have to like pay for the consequences of my actions. I don't understand how the Sixers could let him come back.
It's really tough. You have a player from the other team confront you. And I feel like they must have printouts of those fans up on a wall and be like, you can't let these dudes back in. I feel like they had their access revoked to the Wachovia Center or whatever the hell it's called. I don't even know. it's very funny that you looked up the price of Frosties, because I also did. A large chocolate Frosty now is $2.69. So on the high end now, with inflation and a large, which I presume it's not a large. I presume it's probably a medium or maybe even a small. A small now, $1.69. A medium is $2.39. And a large chocolate Frosty, 590 calories, 269 right now.
It's, I mean, it really is. I'll go a step farther and say that there, you could get the Dave Thomas Foundation sold something called a Wendy's Frosty keychain, I think, Frosty key tag, $2, and you got a free Frosty every single time you went to Wendy's.
Unbelievable. Wait a minute. You buy, it's like a keychain. It like hangs on your keys.
And it's, you get a keychain.
Unreal.
That's right. Keychain. Dave Thomas Foundation helps kids find foster homes. And for $2.
What a deal.
With purchase of any Wendy's, anything, you got a Frosty along with it.
Unbelievable.
Meal.
What a fantastic deal from the Dave Thomas.
What
people.
A deal.
My God, what a deal. I'm furious I don't have one of those little things hanging off my keys.
Yeah, me too. Wow. Me too. But again, just to paint how incredulous and like how far as a society we've fallen that like you dangle 50 cents worth of free ice cream in front of people and they you hear it. You hear it in Kevin Harlan's like call. He's like, "You got it. We did it. We can taste it." And it's like, it's just bedlam.
Oh,
it's ecstasy.
God. Oh, just perfect. Before we move on, have you had the non-dairy chocolate shake at Shake Shack? Do you have Shake Shacks up there?
There is Shake Shacks in New England. I have not had the non-dairy one, though.
Let me tell you, I've talked about this on the show before. It is to die for. It might be, in my opinion, the finest ice cream dessert I've ever had at a chain restaurant.
Wow.
And it's also not dairy. It's non-dairy. So if you have, you know, dairy issues, and I'm not saying I do, my body's very strong. I can handle anything. But should you have that issue, non-dairy chocolate shake at Shake Shack. I read that it was like a geneticist or something, like manufactured this thing, like put together a formula. It's so good. I can't even believe it. Anyways, just a little ice cream, chocolate ice cream talk here on the pod.
I would love to try it. That sounds delicious. I'm a huge desserts guy, so that sounds great to me.
You mentioned that it's amazing what someone will do for 50 cents worth of free ice cream. I couldn't agree with you more. Deeply, deeply, deeply adds to this moment. There's a number of things that those fans could have been mad about, but it being a Frosty is just endlessly funny. It is crazy so what funny. People will do for free food. George, do you have any stories about anything that you've gone to, any lengths you've gone to get free food? Maybe from, like, I don't know, your first day in New York City?
I do. There was there was when I first moved to Astoria, Queens, I had no money.
Right.
And I was passing by a bar that was opening that was hosting a burger eating competitive eating contest.
How old are you? Hold on, set the stage. How old are you?
I am 21 or 22 years old.
Okay.
I literally just moved to New York City within that week.
Got it.
I didn't have a job. I had almost no money to my name, and I walked by this place, and they were asking people if they wanted to sign up to do a hamburger eating competition. And I said, in my mind, I just went, "Oh, this is just free lunch." So I said, "Sure, no problem. Yeah, this is great. Of course I do. I want to do this. This is like, it didn't even occur to me. Like, why would I ever turn this down?" So they brought me over, and this is for those of you, like, it was right by the Ditmars,
subway,
Astoria N and Q stop.
Yeah.
And I immediately realized I'd made a mistake, because they brought me over and they sat me down with a bunch of dudes who were significantly bigger than myself. And they all had shirts and cups that matched. Like, they had come to this like radio station that was hosting a competitive eating competition. Like, they went there with the intention of competing. And I just happened to be walking by because they needed to fill a few more seats.
Right.
So I sit down on this long table facing all of these people, and in between each of us is probably like a stack of, I don't know, 10. It's just a burger in a bun. And
no
a cup
cheese,
of water.
No cheese, no ketchup.
No nothing.
Lettuce. Okay.
No, nothing. It's bare. And they start introducing these people, and it's like, you know, Tony from, you know, Tony Gonzalez from Staten Island, and, you know, Lou Pearlman from the Bronx, and George from Queens. And it was just like crickets, you know, because again, these people had come with, they had come with people to come cheer right. them on as
they have fans
wolfed down. They have fans. Exactly. They have a support base.
Right.
So
are you, hold on, to set the scene here. Are you on some sort of raised platform? Or are you on a stage?
No, I'm sitting at a table. Okay. So everyone is essentially looking down on me, because you're just sitting at a table while a bunch of other people standing around you watching.
Got it. How many people are there on the dais with you? How many people are competing?
There is at least 10 people at this like at two Fantastic. Like long folding tables.
Amazing. Keep going.
And so there's the radio station where I can't remember, but it was not a radio station that I would be like, oh, you know, it wasn't like Z100 or something. Was some random, yeah, who knows what, you know, promoting this restaurant opening.
Right.
And so they were like, okay, on the count, you know, they were going to count us down and then you go. And I was like, okay, I have to do this.
Right.
I have to go quickly. Because my intention was just to get lunch, was not to eat as much as I could. So they were like 3, 2, 1, go. And I kind of like head down, focus, like, let, you know, there was a part of me that was like, maybe I'm good at this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there was a little part of me that was like, this is New York, the city of, like, maybe this is like what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right.
And so, you know, I put my head down and I eat this burger. I eat this burger in what I felt like was a pretty good amount of time.
Yeah.
I was like, I feel pretty good about what I just did. And I kind of look up, and in the time it had taken me to eat one, I think the guy to my left was on his third or fourth. And what he was taking his bread, dunking it in the water, sliding it down his throat, taking the patty, snapping it in half, stuffing it in his mouth. And I was like, oh my God.
Snapping it. Like,
he was just like, just trying to get as much like saturation into his mouth to just let the food slide down. And I was like, in that moment, I realized, oh, I'm out here. So then I just kind of took my time with the second burger, you know, and just kind of enjoyed my stay.
Oh my God.
And then I just left because, again, I was alone. I came there with everyone and they were like, okay, thanks. And I just kind of walked. I walked away.
Oh my God.
It was very, very sad.
So wait, how many burgers do you end up eating in total?
I just ate two. They were not very good. They were not very good. And they were naked. Like, how many burgers would you want? Like, yes, it's not like a little Shake Shack. These were like, they weren't half pound. But like, they had to be a, you know, quarter pound or more of this just kind of beef on like a
frozen patty that they for sure just
frozen patty on like a white bread stale bun.
Yes.
I was like, after two of those, I was like, I would never eat more than this.
Yeah. So you, is there a period where you have basically stopped eating and you're not going to eat more, but the competition is still going on? Or do you like time it up to the end of the timer there?
No, I mean, after I ate two, I was like, I could take another one, but I really, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't even know how many more people are like notice me anymore.
Right.
You know, like the people who were winning were near the other end of the table. And I think they were at like 9 or 10.
Oh my God.
And so that they, you know, the crowd had kind of moved on. I was clearly with the other sad men near the end of the table.
A great story. It's funny what people do for free food, isn't it, George?
Yes, you're right. You know what? It's a little bit of humble pie for old George.
Let's get back into our moment. Isaiah Thomas's Frosty Freeze Out. Here's some analytics behind this. Here's some numbers behind this. People love numbers as the first ballot Hall of Fame credentials. Analytics. In this game, Isaiah Thomas played 25 minutes. He was 5 of 13. That's 38%. 2 of 5 from 3-point line. That's 40%. 8 of 9 from the line. 20 points in total. 3 assists. 3 turnovers. A fine game. Bradley Beal led the Wizards with 36 points. He does get ejected at the end of the game. He ends up getting suspended 2 games by the league.
Unbelievable.
Suspended for 2 games, ejected from the game, then suspended for 2 more. Isaiah Thomas made $2.3 million that season on a 1-year deal. Losing those 2 games, he let the Frosty guy take
$56,586. Whoa. Oh, my God. That's unbelievable. Oh, my God. $56,000?
$56,000, the 2-game total that he made. $56,000 to walk up and tell those guys, don't say that.
Be a man.
Yeah, be a man.
That is unbelievable. I can't. Do you think, and like, obviously, like, money to multimillion-dollar athletes means something different, but still, $56,000 to walk into the crowd to prove your point is unbelievable.
I'd argue it's a terrible financial decision, but for our purposes, knowing that number and it being a Frosty undoubtedly makes this moment funnier, true or false.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes it devastating.
It really does. Yeah, here's the question. Here's the burning question for you, George, as we consider whether this moment is the funniest moment. Does Isaiah being clearly moved, in a negative way, does him losing $56,000, does it hurt how funny this is, or do you believe it makes it funnier?
I think it makes it funnier because the first time you listen to that clip and you're like, oh my God, what happened? What did he do? What did he say? And he says Frosty in that, in that dejected, sad, defeated way is so funny.
It's so funny.
And the idea that he lost $56,000 on top of that is unbelievable.
It's outrageous. Robbie, I'm going to listen to the rest of this interview to see if there's another part of this clip I wanted to play. I can't remember.
I've been in the league for a while. Fans are going to say whatever they want. Don't ever call me out of my name. That's not, because I would never do that to anybody else. And I think that crossed the line. Like, I got kids. I got a family. Like, that's not okay at all. So I just went to go tell him that. No disrespectful way, as calm as I am right now. And those are the 3 things I said, and that was his response.
What do you think the response will be from the league?
I don't know. I know they're going to investigate, and I'm going to tell them the same thing. So if you're for the players, I feel like you're going to back me because I didn't do anything disrespectful.
You mentioned a clip earlier on, and we did find it and pull it down as well. Of course, someone was shooting cell phone footage just off the side of these guys as Isaiah approaches. Isaiah's not bullshitting in this interview when he says he was completely calm and collected. He just told him to take it easy. Here's that audio. And also, it also confirms, if you listen very closely at the top of this clip, it confirms that the Frosty thing was no joke, because the first thing you hear from one of the guys is about the Frosty. Here it is.
Where's the Randy Frosty?
Don't do that, bro.
It's just a delight. It's delightful that we have camera angles, you know, ped cams for the league broadcast, that, you know, someone was out wide and you can see Isaiah go into the audience. There's a camera behind the scorer's table that catches footage of Isaiah up in the stands. There's cell phone footage. We really have nice coverage of this moment. And then, of course, that delicious presser from Isaiah in the locker room afterwards, and using the word explicitly, not even saying what, you know, not even dismissing it as like whatever the promotion is that the Sixers run or whatever Wendy's thing. He goes, they wanted a Frosty. Yes. Like, to use the name, it's just delightful.
It's so good. It's the best named dessert at a fast food restaurant, and for it to come out like that. I've never had the Burger King Hershey's pie. I've heard that's delicious, but Frosty feels so iconic. Frosty feels so it's so iconic. And he's so hurt.
So
earnestly hurt by all this.
He really is. He mentions his kids. I heard during the clip there, he mentioned his kid and you started laughing.
I did. Well, I'm just like, again, I don't know what kind of headspace Isaiah Thomas is, or any professional athlete would be in, but like, at some point, if you're in, you're doing your job and there's someone in the stands going, fuck you, bitch.
Yeah.
Fuck you, bitch. Fuck you, bitch, over and over again. 2 big middle fingers in your face. It's It's unbearable.
Oh my God. It's so good. I wish, and it probably exists. I wish they'd release the footage that you have to presume that ped cam was wide enough that there is footage of those kids flipping them off. I would kill to see that footage.
Yeah, I would.
I'd kill to see that.
He had to have been saying it loud because
for sure.
He's not courtside. He is a little bit, he's a couple rows back.
Yep. Also, the words fuck you and bitch are very easy to lip read. Like, if you think about lip reading those, because of the way you have to form your mouth, like, it's very clear he's saying fuck you, bitch. And then it's probably easier to hear because you can see it. It really is fantastic. It's so good. I'm so glad you brought it up. Eye test. Was there anything else that you saw in this clip that makes it, in any of the footage you've seen of this moment, was there anything else that makes this moment special?
His calm and like just like watch that clip again and just watch how slow that walk is, how confident that move is, and how immediately defensive those kids get. They're they're immediately like, oh shit, whoa. No. Please.
Please, NBA
like
player.
Those, please. Oh my God. Like you realize just how like magnificently talented and like I can only imagine how athletic these men look close up that you're like, whoa, no, wait, please. I'm an idiot. I'm so sorry.
I also love at the top of this clip how insanely guilty Isaiah looks. Yeah, it's very clear he knows he's going to get in trouble. Yes. He's basically fine with it. Like, he's not, like, worried about it. But it's clear he knows he shouldn't have done whatever it is that he did. It's just a very funny, like, hangdog look. Yeah, whatever, man. I'm going to get in trouble. I don't give a shit. And then when he gets ejected, he gives away his headband to a kid, which feels like that thing where you know you screwed up. And you to try and get this back, to like try and be like, I'm a good guy and it's not that big of a deal. Oh, you asked me for something? Here, I'm going to give your grandkid my headband and like tap you on the shoulder and be like, I'm a good. It's so clear he did that on purpose. It's so clear he knew the cameras were on him and were rolling and it was live broadcast and he knew it was on him and he was like looking for an opportunity to be like, I don't look bad here. I have to somehow save this. Him trying to save it by giving away his headband was just very relatable to me. Like I could feel like I can imagine his chest was just on fire from just like that, the heat of embarrassment and like being angry at this dude, and to try and save it by giving a kid your headband. It's just perfect. Rich, famous person move there. Really hats off to Isaiah.
Yeah, that's a great. And also that he gives grandpa there like a little shoulder tap. Like it's going to be all right.
Yes.
I got you.
It's gonna be okay.
I'm still IT.
Oh my
god! Don't worry.
Let's move on to the next credential. Is there X Factor? Everybody knows what an X Factor is. George, do you have an X Factor? Anything else that makes this moment funny stand out?
It's the mystery of it all until the very end, where you're like, "What the hell happened?" Yeah. And then you get that the beautiful Frosty reveal. It is like you were saying, it's a Zapruder film. Like we don't know what happened until we finally get the angle of like, oh my God, there's the head being blown off.
Yes. It's oh Jesus Christ. I do not co-sign that. What's amazing to me is I had never seen this moment before you told me you wanted to talk about it. So I literally watched the clip of the game and was like, what the hell happened? Like the announce, it was as though I was watching it live because I'm watching the game broadcast. I have no clue what's going on. I'm just watching it be kicked out. I'm wondering why George wants to talk about this. And then the post-game press conference comes up and I'm watching him be serious. I'm like, there's got to be something funny that happens in here. And then he drops Frosty and you can't believe how funny it is. So it good. Is,
the Frosty reveal has to be the X Factor because it's just you're just so confused until the very end and then it all immediately, it's all so well justified.
Can I submit my X Factor to you, George?
Yes, please.
If you listen closely, the arena sound guy is playing It Takes Two by Rob Bass, which I think is really sharp. whoever works for the 76ers is not putting this on the fans. He's playing the song It Takes Two by Rob Bass, and he's making you consider, hey, it takes two guys to tango here. We can't be mad at just the fans. We got to be, what's this guy doing in the stands? It Takes Two. I really appreciate that. That's the sort of detail that I think is really additive in a moment like this. The other thing is, do you know the date of this game?
I believe it was December 21st.
December 21st. That's exactly right. This is the holiday season that this is happening. The fucking Christmas is right around the corner.
Days away from the holidays. Oh my gosh. That's so funny. And oh my God. Yeah,
fuck you, bitch. Days... Fuck you, bitch. Fuck you, bitch. Days away this from is... the Christmas season.
Days away. Also, now that you say that, days away, December 2019, we're also months away from the NBA shutting down because of COVID. And undoubtedly, the frosty freeze out disappearing for a prolonged period of time.
Yes. A great point. 100%.
COVID are ravaging parts of the United States already that we didn't know about.
We didn't know how good we had it. That has to be part of the reason why I missed this moment, because I must have been, staring down the barrel of a global pandemic. I really can't believe that I missed it. I hope that someone else learned about this moment for the first time on this podcast as well. It's really fantastic. My last thing here, the comment section, a guy wrote on Reddit, talking about IT in his press conference, I don't know how he kept a straight face. I couldn't agree more. How the hell does he say Frosty in that moment and not like kind of laugh?
Oh my God, you're totally right. And I think honestly, it goes back to his attitude through this entire thing where like, he is righteous.
Right.
He is like, I have been wronged.
Right.
I am standing high atop the mountain here. And like, there's nothing funny about this. Like, I've been disrespected as a human being in the name of a Frosty. So like, this isn't funny to me. I am just like, this is just the truth. Everything that I've did, everything that I've told you has been absolutely true.
Yeah. It's really funny. Like, what is, you consider like what makes something funny. There's something about when someone knows exactly how funny something going to be and they say it, and like when you see a great stand-up and they tell a joke that they know they're killing it with, they know it's going to rip, they know it's a great joke, and they say it, and you can see a little bit of delight in their face because they know how funny it is, versus the seriousness with which, how sad, legitimately sad he seems as he's saying it. It's, six one way, half a dozen the other. Which do you find funnier? It's a lot to consider. I wonder how much funnier it would be if he sort of snickered about it. Like, what if he says Frosty and then he kind of cracks a little wry smile and then all of the reporters start dying laughing? Would that have made it funnier? I wonder. It's a lot to consider. We have to consider all of it here.
I do like that he's so, strong-willed in his, like, he is, I have been wronged. I am in the right. And like, he says Frosty as if he was, saying the word, like the name of a car. It just doesn't matter. Oh, he just rolls right through it.
It's so good. Let's keep moving. We're going to move on to my moment, but before we do, George, we worked together on No Script with Marshawn Lynch. Do you have a favorite moment from working with Mr. Marshawn Lynch?
There was the moment that sticks out to me is when we were discussing who would be the person that Marshawn was going to be in their ear and tell, like, through a hidden camera setup, who would be the person manning the register. And he looked right at me and he was like, you. he knew exactly, and pointing at me, he knew exactly what kind of coward I was, and he read the room so well.
Yep.
And that is like, when you say that, that is exactly what comes to my mind.
Were you nervous, or did you feel glad that he picked you? Like, were there mixed emotions in that, oh man, I'm going to have to do this thing? But were you also like, yep, this guy gets it, and I am going to make this funny, and you completely got it? Like, what were your emotions in that moment?
In that moment, it was just, terror of like, oh my God, I can't believe, like, he is gonna, God knows what he's gonna make me say, or like with the situation I'm gonna find myself in. But and then also the other part of me was like, he's right in that, like, of all the people in the room, he definitely picked the biggest, you know, he picked the biggest dweeb to do this to. Yeah. So like, he's absolutely right. And also I'm mortified of what might happen. Or like, and earnestly concerned.
Also, the chemistry between the two of you is so genuine and real. And like, he knew that's what it would be. Like, he knew that if that this will translate very well on camera, and I am going to say things naturally that this guy will definitely not want to say, and that will be the source of the comedy. He really totally got that, and it is one of the best moments. We'll put that on the social thread as well, at First Ballot, HOF on Instagram, at First Ballot Pod on Twitter. George, Hidden Camera with Marshawn Lynch. It's fantastic. Okay. My moment. This is the moment that I think is funniest.
Mm-hmm.
Let me actually start the story here. 2008 playoffs. It's the spring of 2008. The San Antonio Spurs are the 3 seed. The Phoenix Suns are the 6 seed. First round of the NBA playoffs. The Spurs end up winning the series in 5 games. The gentlemen sweep. They handle the Suns for the first 3 games. Then Phoenix wins one to not be swept out. And then San Antonio gets them out of their 5 games. Unceremonious finish to the Phoenix Suns season. This is Phoenix Suns with Shaquille O'Neal. That's the year. What do the Spurs use to take control of this series? Hack-a-Shaq. It might be peak Hack-a-Shaq philosophy and strategy. Greg Popovich effectively uses the Hack-a-Shaq during this playoff series, and he does so well, it genuinely has an actual effect on this series. Here are some analytics behind this moment. Again, 2008 playoffs. Shaq plays in 5 straight games. From the free throw line, he's 32 of 64. He's exactly 50% in a 5-game series. 64 free throws in 5 games. That's 12.8 free throws per game. Huge number. That's like Dwayne Wade winning the 2006 finals type free throw numbers. Crazy. And it's all because Popovich is fouling Shaq intentionally, so that Shaq has to go to the free throw line, notoriously bad free throw shooter, and he shoots 50%. Does it ever swing or matter in an actual game? How about this? Game one, Shaq misses 2 free throws, and the Suns lose the game by 2 points. Game two, Shaq misses 7 free throws, and the Suns lose by 6 points. Game three, Shaq misses 8 free throws. The Suns lose by 16. No big deal. The Suns win game four. And then game five, Shaq misses 11 free throws. And the Suns lose game five by 5 points. And Shaq missed 11 free throws. So the Suns effectively get Hack-a-Shaqed right out of the NBA playoffs.
Unbelievable.
So how does Shaq reply in a press conference before the next season? Because again, they get knocked out of the spring 2008 playoffs. Fall of 2008, this is October 15th of 2008. Shaq is talking to Phoenix radio station KTAR about game one of the 2008-2009 NBA season. And who are the Phoenix Suns playing? Shaq and the Phoenix Suns, who are they playing? The San Antonio Spurs. We're running it back. Game one of the 2008-2009 series is Shaq and the Suns against the Spurs. O'Neal tells the radio station, quote, "The only thing I call cowardly is when you're up 10 and do it. By doing it means the Hack-a-Shaq. That's a coward move. And Popovich knows that I'll make them pay for it. The strategy doesn't work. You know San Antonio tried it, but they went home a couple weeks after we went home." So Shaq is referencing the playoff series that he just had. He's calling Popovich and the Spurs, they're calling it a, he's calling it a coward move and saying it had no impact. Yes, the Suns lost, but the Spurs did not go on to win the championship. Is in fact, the Spurs would later go on and lose in the Western Conference Finals to the NBA's greatest team and maybe the greatest franchise in all of sports, the Los Angeles Lakers, in that Western Conference Finals. But that's neither here nor there. Shaq tells KTAR that Popovich, by employing Hackershack, it's a coward move. So how does Greg Popovich respond? Game one, tip off, Shaq jumps center, Phoenix gets the ball, and within the first 10 seconds, Greg Popovich immediately goes to Hackershack and intentionally fouls Shaquille O'Neal. 3 seconds into the game, let's listen to the moment together.
It's going to be difficult because you're talking about a Western Conference that got better. It's a team with a brand new coach and a brand new mentality that they're trying to instill. The question is, will they be able to sustain it when adversity sets in?
And Jeff, for San Antonio, once again, people are saying, as they immediately have a Hackershack call, I don't believe it. 5 seconds in.
No, but that was... But that's a joke, yeah.
Well, of course, it happened in the playoffs when they met last year. Greg Popovich did it quite a bit.
So why did the announcers laugh there? Shaq gets intentionally fouled after the tip-off. We are seconds into the first game of the season. And the Spurs intentionally fouls Shaq. Shaq is completely mystified. He's clearly visibly confused. He's got that Shaq look on his face where he's like, what the hell is going on? He's completely lost. He looks over to the Spurs bench and sort of gives him a nod, like almost in like an aggressive way, like, all right, you're going to fucking foul me this early? I fucking got really. You. Like, it's clear he's like a little angry. And then, of course, the director of the NBA game, whoever directed that game, hats off, cuts to a shot of Popovich on the bench. And Popovich immediately goes, double thumbs up. And
huge
the biggest smile, a double thumbs up from double middle fingers to double thumbs up from your moment to mine. Popovich goes double thumbs up and everyone on the bench explodes into laughter.
Oh my God. I've never seen that man look happier than in that moment.
Oh my God.
Those huge, huge, big, like, you know, this is, I don't know when Borat came out, but like this huge thumb, like these huge thumbs. Like he's so happy. Like this is clearly something that he's been waiting for and thinking about doing.
That's what really
good.
When you see Popovich in that moment, you go, oh my God, he understands exactly how funny this is. Like he did this on purpose and you realize, and that's why you hear the announcers laugh. They don't know what's going on either. So you get to watch in this clip, everyone figure this out together. Shaq, you, the home audience, and the announcers, all three of us in one fell swoop get to realize, oh shit, this is a joke. This is a practical joke that he's doing in the beginning of the first game of the season.
It's incredible. It's also, it's so weirdly satisfying to see them have some levity with like a team foul, like to be like, we're not taking this super serious, you know, whatever. It's a foul and not like there are probably only so many coaches that could get away with doing something like that to immediately like give up a team foul like that. It's so funny.
It's really fascinating to think about. I thought you'd really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this, that it happens that they literally stopped the game to pull a prank.
It's amazing.
Makes you realize that the game doesn't really matter. Like in a way, blast the facade of this, like being this like serious competition. It doesn't really matter. Literally, the coaches can whenever they want pull a prank in the middle of the game. That's the truth.
They just, it's so funny to be like, yeah, hey, you are gonna get a foul for doing this little joke.
Yeah.
I'm the coach. I'm telling you that it's okay.
Yeah.
It's funny because you're right. It goes from being this like big competition to like, oh yeah, it is. Remember, we're all just part of this big entertainment industry. Like this is just for fun.
Yes.
We're all just having a good time here,
guys. We're goofing off, fellas.
Yeah, we're goofing around. We're all just goofing off. Look at my thumbs up. You're totally right. I love that it's like, we're not taking this super seriously.
Oh my God.
And like that does happen in the NBA every now and then. And this is like a crazy, but like where my mind went was like when Kobe passed away and every team was like, we're all going to do this. Like we're all going to take a foul together because of this,
right,
for this incredible person. But it was like, oh yeah, we can all agree to this. We can agree that this can be fun. It doesn't have to be hyper serious all the time.
Exactly. You can do it. They can literally do whatever they want. No one's going to get them in trouble ever. And it sort of makes me like, I sort of vacillate between going as a fan, oh shit, this thing that I like completely wrap my life up in is not really important. And then also me going, I wish they'd goof off more. Like part of me wishes they'd goof off more. So it's just a lot of fun to think about. I test here as I watch this clip. The assistant coaches bring real joy to my life in watching this because Popovich goes double thumbs. He's got his mouth open. It's like kind of almost like a goofy, stupid looking smile on his face, which I appreciate from Pop. And then Budenholzer, who won a title with the Milwaukee Bucks, he's legitimately dying. Shaq gets this huge smile on his face. He knows exactly how funny it is because Shaq's funny. He completely gets it. Kurt Thomas is behind Shaq, and he's sort of like testing the waters to see if it's okay to laugh. And then there's a coach. I had to look him up his name because he just really – I really enjoy this guy. His name is Don Newman. He was an assistant coach for the Spurs. He is on Pop's right side, and he is just perfect – stereotypical old man belly laugh. He is chortling. His whole body is like jiggling. He's got a pen in his mouth as he's like laughing. He's like, you know, he's clearly smiling through holding the pen in his teeth. There's just a real joy to his reaction to this. Everyone is embroiled in a prank. They all love it. It's so delightful.
It's so delightful. And also I feel like to be that captured and that surprised by it, like it has to be something that like very rarely happens. Yes. And especially from a coach of that caliber, it's just like, it's a combination of that is a really funny thing to do and pure disbelief. Like how in the world could you have ever thought to do this?
Right. That's right. That's right.
I would love to know whose idea it was.
I have that answer. We'll get to it in just a second. The eye test, my last thing on the eye test, Michael Finley follows him. This is neither really here nor there. It doesn't affect the moment in the least. I do think it's very funny to send little old thin little Michael Finley to intentionally foul this grizzly bear man. That's very funny. You know that grizzly he's called bear. You cowards for doing this. And then you're going to foul this guy and you send your slight waifish shooting guard. I mean, Finn Dog's probably a monster compared to me, but compared to Shaq, he's like a little kid. Very funny to send a shooting guard to go foul Shaq. Very funny. Okay. The X factor here, before we get to the big reveal of who came up with this, the X factor here, everybody knows what an X factor is. The Suns won the tip, which is very important if you think about it.
Yes.
This is way funnier if it happens right away. If the Spurs win the tip and there's a full possession of made or missed basket before You're there's totally an inbounds, right. And it is very important that it happens right away, correct?
No, it is. It's a vital.
Well, then I agree with you. It made me go, well, wait a second. Did they intentionally lose the tip? And I rewatched the play. Tim Duncan doesn't even leave his feet. They completely set this up. Everyone was in on it. All parties knew. God. They told Duncan, you got to lose the tip because we got to do this early. They knew it was funniest if you do this right out of the shoot. That's the type of comedy understanding that really makes me appreciate it. And again, as we were talking about that balance, that weight, that difference between Isaiah genuinely being hurt and him genuinely being sad and that being additive versus someone knowing the funniest execution of this prank is if this happens right out of the shoot. There's just, it's, you know, once it's, they're weights on the same barbell, but they're on opposite ends. And which is funnier? We have to decide that as a people.
I've watched this clip a few times and I never noticed Tim Duncan he doesn't jump at all.
Right. That's right. It's
unbelievable.
It's a necessary execution to make this joke as funny as it could possibly be. Like, it's like, it's like Kevin Hart in some movie, you know, needing the straight man to say, you know, to give the setup before he delivers the punchline. It's a perfect execution of this bit. It really makes me happy that they knew that this would be funny, that they everyone agreed to do this. They put in the plan to make it work, and then they executed it perfectly. The last credential here, and this is our reveal of where this came from. It's the press conference. Any great quotes about this? Yes. Jerry Brown in the East Valley Tribune, October 28th, 2008. In the East Valley Tribune, I don't know what that is. I presume it's a newspaper. Jerry Brown wrote, "With Shaquille O'Neal's coward comments still ringing in the ears of Spurs fans before Wednesday's game, a reporter asked San Antonio coach Greg Popovich if he would consider a mock hack-a-shack on the first possession of the game to jokingly prove that he wasn't backing down from his strategy in the last year's playoff. Popovich stopped. He ran his fingers through his new white beard and then started to grin. Quote, you know, that's not a bad idea now that I think about it."
That's incredible.
But here's my thing, George. I watch this play every time, and I probably watch this play two or three times every season. I watch this play every time, and when they reveal Popovich and the double thumbs up and everyone's laughing, I always presumed it was Popovich's joke. But it's not. He stole a joke from the real funny person is whoever the reporter was.
Do you think that there could, do you think that, like, if he is doing, like, if he's stroking his beard, like he's thinking about it, do you think maybe he already had the idea and maybe he's like, oh, this is a good, okay.
I think he stole it. I think he, here's what he said again. You know, that's not a bad idea now that I think about it. I think he realized in that moment how funny it would be. And for the record, he takes full credit for that joke. Like, when he does the double thumbs up, he didn't go do an interview and go, hey, this reporter said it and he's the one that should get the credit. Like, everyone assumes that's Greg Popovich's joke. This, to me, disastrously hurts this moment. Are you not with me? Do you not think it's slightly less enjoyable that it's not Popovich's joke?
No, I do agree, because it feels like if it was a thing that was, like, born in the locker room with the coaches or from a player and he would had to, like, mull it over and think about it, it feels more earned than, like, stealing it from, I mean, great idea for the reporter.
Yes.
You know, like, hire that guy. Put that guy, like, you know, that guy should have a social media job.
100%.
But yeah, you're totally right. It does hurt its contention.
It feels like stolen valor. Greg Popovich.
My
entire life I assumed, oh man, Greg Popovich is so funny that he thought to do that. You want Greg Popovich to be sitting in some San Antonio office room and to hear the coward comment from Shaq and for him to go, you know what we should do? We should follow him on the first goddamn play. And everybody goes, that's so funny. Do you really think you can do it? And they're like, hell, let's just do it. Who cares? Like, you want that conversation and it's all gone. And when you see Pop smile and put his thumbs up, you go, that's the full backstory. This whole conversation must have happened. And now that I know that it didn't, it really hurts my enjoyment of it.
You're right. You really do want, you want Popovich, like, to shoot awake at 3 a.m. sweaty.
Yes.
Like, you know, in a hotel room and, like, call his home, call his, like, home phone number and, like, leave himself a message and be like, this is for Pop.
Yes.
And for this to be, an idea that he had in, like, June. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, he's just been sitting on it for months and months.
That's so funny. Like, I'm picturing him now with, like, a little vocoder, like a little voice recorder.
Yes.
And he's like,
yes, exactly.
He wakes up, it always sits right next to his bedside table, and he just pops it over and goes, a note for Pop, foul Shaq on the first play of the next season. That's so funny.
That's exactly. That's like, is it, I, I'm, I'm, the guy who wrote the NBA theme song.
Yeah, John Tesh.
That's like the John Tesh. There's like a famous voicemail from him of him basically like singing the NBA theme song into his answering machine.
That's right.
And that is you're right in that I want this story to be born from a basketball genius.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. You said you wanted it like after the playoffs, like after they get eliminated or something, after he hears the power thing. You want Pop to call David Stern in the moment and go, hey, is there any way you could line it up so that Phoenix and San Antonio play game one? Like, you want it to be as involved as possible. And when like you see when you see him smile, you just presume that all of this went into it. And he cheated it. He stole it. He grabbed it and used it. And credit on the execution. Credit on the double thumbs up. Like, he still did a great job, you know, executing, but it does take away from my enjoyment of it. And listen, I didn't know that going in. I picked this moment to talk about. I did the research for the show as I usually do. Very copious research. I never cut corners ever. And I learned in this moment that, you know, there was something that takes away from this in my head, and that hurts. I got to be honest, it hurts. Here's one last detail that I wanted to leave you with. During this game one of the 2008-2009 season, Popovich goes on in this game to actually use Hack-a-Shaq at the end of the first half. Shaq ends up making 5 of his 8 free throws to give the Suns a halftime lead. And then the Suns end up beating San Antonio in game one by 5 points. Would you look at that? Shaq, 5 of 8 from the line. Suns win by 5. Maybe the Hack-a-Shaq doesn't work, and Shaq proved his point. This was game one of the 2008-2009 series. Who won the West that year, George? Do you want to guess who won the West that year, 2008-2009?
I'm going to guess the Lakers.
That's exactly right. The Los Angeles Lakers. They actually would go on to win the West and then the NBA World Championship in June. And then the following season, the Lakers again would repeat, going back-to-back and beating the Boston Celtics in game 7. All revenge. Right. Fantastic.
there is something, as you're saying that, like, you're like, oh, it's this funny thing that, you know, Shaq did, that Pop did to Shaq. But I again, similar to IT's moment, at its core, Hack-a-Shaq is like unbearably cruel.
Yeah.
Like I have deduced that the best way for our team to succeed is to make you shoot, a professional basketball player, shoot the basketball in front of all these people.
On national television.
You're so bad at this that it makes sense for us to make you do it rather than give the ball to any other player at any point in the court.
Right.
Like, that's unbelievable. Like, that's like something you would see a villain do in like a kid's basketball movie. You know what I mean? Like, foul air, put Air Bud on the line.
He's gonna fuck
you know
up.
What I mean? He's gonna fuck it up. And like, imagine, I'm just trying to imagine if that was like, you know, again, if that was my kid, if that was your kid, and you saw the opposing coach like, foul that kid.
Yes.
You'd be like, you fucking piece of shit.
You're exactly
I'll
right.
I'll kill you. I will fucking kill you.
That's so funny. He really is. He is fine ridiculing Shaq in that moment. It's fine.
And the dichotomy of, hey, it's not that serious. I'll give you a foul. This is all a joke. Into, this is an actual strategy. I don't care about your feelings. Yep. I'm going to foul you and make you shoot the ball and embarrass yourself.
Yes.
Is incredible.
It's really great. It's really, really good. And you're right. Air Bud can't shoot outside of about 6 to 8 feet. That's his range.
You know,
they won't tell you that. It's not. They won't tell you that because they're trying to be nice about the dog. But I don't give a shit about dogs. No. I'll say it out loud. Air Bud can't shoot from 15 feet. Put him on the line. You'll win the game.
Put him on the line. You want to brag about it? They got a dog on their team. Put him on the line.
Foul
Let's go.
That
Let's see how
fucker.
Tough they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Foul that piece of shit. Who cares?
Let's go.
We'll take him right to the kennel. Yeah.
George, it's time for the cosign. You have to decide. The floor is yours, Mike is yours. You have to decide which of these two moments is funnier. Which of these two moments is funnier? That's what you're deciding here. Are you ready to make your decision?
I am ready.
All right, George, which is funnier? The Isaiah Thomas Frosty freeze out. I can't even say it without smiling. I say those words and a smile spreads across my face. Or Shaquille O'Neal's intentional foul, the intentional fouling of Shaquille O'Neal 3 seconds into a game by supposedly Greg Popovich.
It's really hard. It's really tough. But I think you saying that this wasn't Pop's idea makes me go that the funnier moment here is Isaiah Thomas's Frosty freeze-out ejection.
Oh, my God. You know, it makes me think back to our last episode, George, when we had Jordan Leandri's first pitch, and the kid from the Red Sox game throws the first pitch and hits the photographer in the nuts with the ball. And we learned that in that episode, we had the guy that gets, quote-unquote, hit in the nuts with the ball. He comes drops into the episode. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to it. Spoiler alert, go listen to it now. He ends up telling us in the recording, the live recording, that he doesn't get hit in the nuts. And that changed the entire episode. We were both getting ready to induct this thing, to anoint this one of the great moments in sports history. And then when he tells us he is not hit in his private parts, we go, wait. And we're back here at the same moment. Popovich stole this joke. It's not his. And that devastates my moment.
It's true. I mean, last time, you're right, you had me on and then you pantsed me at the last second. you embarrassed me in front of and you took my moment away. And now you maybe you pantsed yourself.
It's time for the induction speech. We'll find out. It's when I get to decide what happens here. Listen, you all as an audience can decide which is funnier. We'll put them online. You can reply to the threads. You can post a comment. You can tell us which of these moments is funnier. I'm going to decide which one of these goes into the first ballot Hall of Fame, if either. I can't hide this. My disgust at finding out this detail that some fucking Texan reporter came up with this joke and it wasn't Popovich, that's devastating to me. It makes me so angry the entire time. You know what's the truth is? Maybe if I had not found out this way, I'd see it differently. But literally for 10 years plus, I've been presuming that Greg Popovich nailed it, that he smoked this moment and nailed this joke. And I have found out in the last 24 hours that is not the case. He executed properly, but it was not his idea. That's devastating to this argument. The funnier moment is Isaiah Thomas's Frosty freeze-out. Does it go into the first ballot Hall of Fame? I'm gonna say no.
What do you mean no?
I'm gonna say no. I think it's
holy shit.
I think it's very funny. I think it's very funny. It's funny enough to get in. It lacks an extra layer of something. If Isaiah had a great game, if he had gotten ejected and it swung the momentum of the game, I'd be super excited. I'd be like, oh, no brainer. If Isaiah knew it was funny, I think I'd enjoy it more. Him being a little hurt, him being like, my dad told me never let anybody call you out of your name, I'm like, it feels a little bit like I'm joining the guys and throwing up my middle fingers and saying, fuck you, bitch, to Isaiah Thomas. I like IT. He's one of the former Celtics I don't loathe and despise. I don't want to jump in on this. It is a very, very funny moment. It's the funnier moment, in my opinion. It's the funnier moment of these two. And it'll be interesting to see when we do the next one of these, does whichever moment wins that episode, does it beat Isaiah Thomas's Frosty Freeze-Out? It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. But I think the moment is a little small to make the first ballot Hall of Fame.
Oh, my God.
With deep respect. George, you did a great job, but the moment's not going to the first Hall of Fame. That's final. That's my decision.
It does feel punitive. Like, it does feel like maybe I brought the funnier moment and I said I liked it more. And now you're saying, well, you know what? It's funnier, but you still can't come to the party. Feels a little bit like this is now two moments in a row that I brought to you that you've shut the door in my face.
I'll say this much. If that's Greg Popovich's joke, my moment is for sure in, and then I'm far more likely to put yours in. I will admit that, but it didn't happen. It didn't happen. I realize it's maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's a splash of cold water on my face. And I realize, you know what? I can't put this pop moment in as funny as it is. And it is a personal favorite of mine. It is a personal favorite of mine. But I can't put it into my Hall of Fame. I need to keep that bar high, and I'm doing it by saying no to the Frosty freeze out and the Popovich intentional foul. It's final. It's over.
Wow. So now, so this moment is currently the first ballot Hall of Fame funniest moment sports.
That's right.
And also is not allowed entry into the first ballot Hall of Fame.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So the next person that comes and pitches you a funny moment is almost certainly to trump this one and get entry into the Hall of Fame. I mean, I get it. Listen, I understand, but I am furious.
I really respect that, George. It means you took it serious. I appreciate the job you did on this show. You were very funny. It was a lot of fun to talk to you. And thank you for coming on the show. Do you have anything you want to plug? What are you working on? How can people follow you? Do you want anybody following you from this show?
Sure, you can find me on Twitter or X, at Old George A. Check out No Script with Marshawn Lynch. That's always a fun show that I'm proud of.
Georgie, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I'm sorry that your mom
didn't make it. Thank you for having me. That's okay. I am angry, and it will come out in different ways in the future.
Got it. That's it. That's the show. My thanks to Georgie and Agnostakos. He enters eating contests. He kills it on podcasts. He's a gentleman with specific tastes, and I love him for that. George and Agnostakos, support that man. Credit. Robbie, Bobby, Jessica, EJ, Rhythm J, and DA, David Ostranskis. That's the team. Shout out to everyone at Ball's Life. Follow them on social at Ball's Life. Rate and review us if you would. Tell us on social which of these two moments is funnier. And please come back next week for more First Ballot.